Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to Flow Guitar Enthusiasts with Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
It's jazz night on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, and we have some great jazz guitarists with us tonight. In studio, we have jazz and session guitarist Ron Hachette, playing with us with his own band, the Ron Hachette Trio, having played with such greats as Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, and Diana Krall. And returning is Les Wise. Besides being a groundbreaking educator with his deliberate music curriculum, has been a jazz guitarist for over 30 years, having written two books for jazz solo for guitar and bebop licks. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is brought to you by Sweetwater Music. Go to Sweetwater, www.sweetwater.com, for some great deals and great gear. And now here's the flow, and my special guest, I want to welcome Monique Caravella, and I just wrote too much stuff. It's my first time doing that. Maybe the last doing that opening, but I just want to welcome Monique and welcome everybody here. It's just great to have everybody here.
That was great. He's doing it.
I didn't have enough coffee. That's really it.
Man.
But anyway, it's great to have you here.
I love being here.
And also, too, before we start the show, I want to mention real quick that we want to thank Lonnie for doing the LA Guitar Effects show. Your impressions real quick of the show, what you saw.
It was nice. It was real similar to the Amp show in October, except, of course, it was much smaller. But it was almost like a bunch of family was there yesterday. You start to see a lot of the same people. But some pretty innovative stuff.
Yes. New Neighbor Pedals was, I love that little angel shimmer. We're going to try to get them on the show.
Yes.
So that should be pretty fun. So, yes, it was an interesting show. And it's amazing all the people that we had met over there.
I
met up with you over there. And we just saw a lot of people we had seen from last year, the year before, and it was great.
A lot of do-it-yourselfers and people just trying to come up with some new things. And it was fun. It was good.
And they had a seminar. I was there for the seminar where all the pedal manufacturers were talking about building pedals and do-it-yourself kits and stuff like that. And I didn't realize that there was a lot of pirating going on, pirating circuits and stuff.
Oh, yeah, because you can get online.
Yeah.
I popped online and figured out, hey, look, tone bender. Right there. There's the schematics.
But anyway, in the future, we're going to have some of the people that we met over there. They'll be on the show. Let's take a break real quick, and then what we will do is we will come back, and we got Ron and we got Les on here. We're going to be talking jazz. I'm really excited about this. We'll be right back.
Hi, Kenny Burgle here from Sweetwater. We're super happy to support Jeff and Scott and the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Show on LA Talk Radio. You can see all the specs and pics of your favorite gear and amazingly low prices online at Sweetwater.com or call us at 800-222-4700. Every week, Jeff and Scott welcome heavy experts and industry mavens exploring the coolest guitars and basses, pedals, amps, strings, accessories, everything you need to rock. Sweetwater sells all that cool stuff, so listen to the flow and then check it out online at Sweetwater.com or call one of our pro guitar enthusiasts at 800-222-4700. Don't forget that Sweetwater has 24 months equal payments, no interest financing available too. Check that out at the bottom of every Sweetwater webpage where it says easy financing and hit the red apply now button. Thanks for listening. This is Kenny Burgle and Sweetwater saying rock on with the flow.
Thank you. amigos. Hello, everyone. My name is Billy Sheehan, and I'm from the Winery Dogs, and you're watching The Flow Guitar Enthusiast.
We are back. I love that. He just does a... He's a great player. It's really amazing. Anyway, let me introduce everybody. Again, I kind of just rambled real fast and tried to run through all of their introductions. But Les is coming back from last week. He was here talking about his music program, TheDeliberateMusician.com. But he wrote some books that I think are really interesting and apropos for the show tonight. Jazz Solo for Guitar, Bebop Licks, and an interesting book kind of covering a lot of different styles of guitar, The 10 Book. So anyway, but he's been playing for over 30 years, and they're both from Louisiana, which is going to be interesting. And so anyway, welcome, Les. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff.
And then Ron, if I'm saying your name's right, Eshate?
No, Eshte.
I will get
close.
This right. Eshte. Okay. Anyway, he's played with a lot of different people. He's the Ron Eshte trio with Todd Johnson on bass and Kendall Kay on drums. He's playing. You've been playing since the 80s, right?
Well, I've been playing with Todd since the 90s. And Todd just left town in 2011, so I'm playing with a lot of different people now.
Oh, okay.
You know. So we were together, you know, 20 years. That was a trio, you know.
But you've played with some... You've been the sideman for a lot of pretty definitive jazz artists. I mean, you started out with Buddy Greco.
Yeah.
And you worked with Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, Diana Krall,
yeah,
and Dizzy Gillespie, and Milt
Brown.
Jackson, and Ray Brown. So I think you might know something about jazz. So, yeah. I mean, no, it's an honor to have you on there. I'm just teasing. But anyway, jazz was always like this mysterious thing. Like, it's like really ethereal. Like, you got to either have the feel or you don't. How would you describe jazz to somebody that has no idea that what is... I mean, either one, jump in. How do you describe it?
You leave that to me. Well, everybody always talks about jazz as a foundation in the blues, for one thing. And, of course, jazz has changed over the years, even the straight-ahead jazz playing. And I'll stay in that vein, straight-ahead jazz, you know, swing. Mm-hmm. You know, you got the Dixieland, and that's moved into bebop, you know, post bebop, and you know, and then it got into the fusion kind of stuff,
right.
And then they started changing the beats, you know, to more of funk and things like that. I mean, that's an overview of 50 years I just gave you, but you know, it's hard to pin one thing down because you know, a gumbo, shall we say, of a lot of different things.
Right. Well, that's... Absolutely. I think that's what makes it even more mysterious, is because, like rock, it's gotten influences from other areas, and there's a multitude of versions of rock, just like there are jazz.
Well, don't forget too. We got the Brazilian, mm-hmm. Puerto Rican, and you know, Mexico and Spain. You know, we got all of those, you know, influences too now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know.
Well, one of the things I think that's integral with jazz, you see it in rock a little bit, in more structured, bigger acts, it's not as much, but in blues, it's very common, is improvisation. It's one of the few ones where you basically create something new each time you play it. But one of the things, and tell me if you agree or disagree, I think one of the things that's important that kind of sets jazz apart is... Like in rock, when they improvise, it's usually single-note melodic things that they're doing. And you can do that in jazz, but it seems also, too, you do chordal improvisation. Comping, I guess, would be the proper term. Is that... Do you agree? Do you think that's unique to a jazz? I don't know if I've heard that in any other form.
I think harmonically, the jazz players play... again, the whole... You know, a lot of what the guys... played in the 50s and a lot of the straight ahead stuff, harmonically speaking, the Brazilians were into all of that then and before. So I mean, it's a whole melting pot of things, and the harmonic structures, I think, in what I would call jazz, straight ahead jazz, the Great American Songbook, is more complex than say what the rock guys are doing. You know, so you know they're playing over something that's usually standing still or moving very little, 1/4, 1/5, things like that.
Right.
Whereas in jazz, it's moving all over the place.
Well, you know, and everybody.
You know, you play a tune like All the Things You Are. It goes 5 keys.
Right.
You know, that's one tune. You know.
Right.
Well, for example, too, and a lot of the fusion bands that came out later in the 70s, and so it became, you would be, the guitar player might be comping either single note melodic or chordal, and then the bass player is doing something else, and then even the drummer is doing counter rhythms. So it's like poly, you know, music. I mean, just totally, totally different structure and complexity of interaction between those different rhythms and harmonies. I don't think you ever saw that. And rock is basically
polyrhythmic. What you're saying,
right? And rock is like, you know, you got what do you call it? Biphonic. You have an accompaniment and then something on top of it, whether it's a vocal. And, you know, you might have a string arrangement or something behind it, but basically it's this progression, rhythm track, and something on top of it, whether it's solo guitar, you know. And I think that complexity, because it's kind of, I mean, there was some progressive rock stuff where they did more polyphonic or polyrhythmic or polyharmonic stuff, but jazz really was where that was. Let's talk a little bit about chord melody. When I was in school, he always told us about the George Smith method, and we use that a lot. Can you demonstrate a little bit of that type of improvisation? Just use like a simple line and then show how you can harmonically alter it by playing some type of chord melody under it and the different type of inversions, and we can talk a little bit what you're doing.
I get to go back to class now.
I just play major scale. What is that? My guitar sounds like a banjo. Okay. All right, so I just played a major scale. Normally you could just, you know, play... right, that'd be triadic. And you could do that with dominant chords, you know what I mean, the seventh chords.
Right, you're basically staying the same chord harmonically.
Well, no, I'm playing C, D, E, F, G, but I'm playing the chord scale, right. You know, C major 7, right. D minor 7, E minor 7, F major 7, G 7, A minor 7, B minor 7, flat 5.
Okay,
so I'm doing that. So there's basically two ways to do that. You could do it that way, or like a lot of guys will do it this way. Just play a C underneath of some type, right? What I stress with my students, and this is an orchestrational device. What you do is you play a 1 and a 5. So I'm going to play. I'll play the first one I just played.
Right.
I mean, that doesn't sound bad, does it? That doesn't sound bad. But listen to this. I got G, C, G, C. So if you're playing a song, can I play a little bit of a song? Or
sure,
you got
sure.
Copyright problems?
Oh,
you know. Right, Misty. Second inning. Now, I've got to get from E flat to B flat minor. So that's what I did. I orchestrated that. You know, it's just
transition.
Like playing. I stress, if you take a song off, you know, like if you play, you know, Bill Evans, right? I'm like, that's fine if you just take the chord, but if you take the orchestration, you know,
basically going the circle fifths, right?
Yeah.
Harmonically.
Well, yeah, and that tune is that way, yeah.
That tune is that way. And then he plays The second one I mentioned, right?
Right.
The second way I mentioned.
Now, when you were doing the last, when you're going up the scale, the interesting one, I was hearing parallel. Was it ninths or was it?
No, what you were hearing is the best progression that known to man. It's called 5-1.
Okay,
that's what you were hearing
when you were doing the scale.
Yeah, because that's what's very inside 5-1.
Okay.
So if I have a chord that's stagnant on a C major 7, you know, I'll have students come to me and say, well, listen, I looked at this lead sheet of this tune, and I heard Joe Pass play it, and it has four chords, and Joe Pass played 27 chords there, you know? So, and I said, well, I said, that's because he knows about the orchestration and how root movement moves. You know, all the good,
right,
good jazz players know that. They don't necessarily know orchestration per se, but they know good root motion. You know, guys, you know, ear players, you know.
Mm-hmm. No, it's that's the secret to me is how you the way there's so many interesting ways. Now take that scale going up, the D scale going up, and now kind of go outside with it harmonically.
Well, go.
Yeah, no, I think that's the secret. You know where to go, and when you take it,
I cheated. I cheated though. I played a B flat in there to the B natural. I just want everybody to know that.
Playing on the outside.
Yeah. But see, that's the thing. That's what's interesting about it is you can take it and to me harmonically, that type of jazz always surprises me because it's like, whoa, why did you go there? You know. You like throw this chord in there out of nowhere, and it really works. Now, in doing chord melody, do you ever, like in orchestration, we all took orchestration with different voices.
And you studied orchestration, huh?
Yes,
you told
me.
So he's very versed in that.
That's why when you're saying the circle fifths, I'm listening how they're parallel moving up. Like you can tell my ear is listening to it a little differently.
Yeah.
But when you're doing chord melody, do you do like do you think in terms of polyphonic? So like you have the lower note going up and the other one going down, or can you demonstrate it? Or
contrary
are you basically
motion.
Are well, you basically
yeah,
using
it depends. It depends what you want to do. When you're talking about polyphonic, you're talking polychordally. And for those people who are not educated in music or anything, There's an octave, let's say in the key of C.
Okay.
We play the first octave. Right, that's the first octave. In the second octave, that's where the second octave is where all the altered tones take place. Because see, after you get past, you know, the five, you know, you get to the seven, nine. Okay, now you're at nine, which is in two. Right, an octave
right.
up.
Right.
So you can sharp that two. You could sharp that nine, or flat that nine, or leave it there. You could sharp that 11. You know, you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I have a saying about that, which is kind of funny. Most people won't get it, but you know, Gene Autry plus Roy Rogers equals Persichetti.
That was brilliant there.
Now
that's very good.
Now it's interesting. With chord melody, I was always taught you can have the melody on top or you can have the melody on the bottom. Can you demonstrate both of those? You already played the melody on top when you did the scale.
Mm-hmm.
Can you do the same thing with the melody on the bottom?
Sometimes you can. Like if I'm holding something. See, I'm keeping the harmony on the top and some kind of motion on the bottom. But I don't think of it always that way. I think of it more as a counter line. So what you basically have, and this is what I tell my students, this is something very basic that if all the young guitar players are studying, this is something that you really want to know. It kind of in a nutshell, it's very quick and easy. You know, Les and I have been doing this for 100 years. But the most important note to play, you need the color, right? So you have a root,
mm-hmm.
but you don't really need to play a root. The color note in a chord is the third. You have to make sure the chord is major or minor first.
Right.
Then the next note would be the seventh, okay? Then the next note after that, any of the other notes for 9 and 13, all of those, you need the seventh and the third first to get the color. The only one that's different is the 11th because it's a fourth. All you really need is a root and a four, you know.
Right.
But now, or you can add to that. Now, I'll do it in C. Let me stay in C. Now, I can take that sus. I can do that, you know, at Herbie Hancock. That big, large chord. I can do that because I have a seventh string guitar.
This is true. This is very true.
He gets that. Yeah, everybody's
you know,
like,
it's interesting,
how do you get it that low?
Yeah.
Exactly.
It was so long ago that I took his classes in chord melody, but I always found myself going back to that class. Even though I don't dissect it as far as you guys are talking about it here, I've actually had students where I'll be teaching them something really simple, and then I'll teach them just a little extra flair, you know, just trying to get the melody line in there while they still have the chord going. And it was just, you know, the little bits and pieces from those classes.
Yeah, it helps. All you really know is you need to know the order of importance of notes. That's why I'm mentioning that. And if you can play the third and the seventh and a melody, and if you can play a bass line, you're home free. You know, just... simple right now. The other part, what you were talking about before, I think more of a as more of a counter line,
right?
You know, notch in the bottom, notch in the middle, notch in the bottom. Then I add the bass. See?
Now, you mentioned that you just mentioned the third and the seventh are important, or the third's the first.
That's the color. That's what takes you. That's what you were hearing when you said the circle of fifths or circle of fourths.
Mm-hmm.
I used to argue with my teacher about that. You know, he said circle of fifths. I said no, it's circle of fourths. He said no, circle of fifths. I said no. You come to my gig with me tonight. I'll play circle of fifths. I'll be looking for another gig.
So the fifth isn't that important.
In particularly in the polyphony in the polychordal, the fifth is kind of in the way. You know, Bert Brough used to be a big proponent of that. Bert Brough was a teacher we both studied with. A real
a film composer that we studied with.
He was a genius. He's just
You know, he taught Wynton Marsalis because he went to this school called NOCA, which is a school for arts, and so he taught him. So, yeah, he was a proponent of that to get rid of the...
See, the interesting thing, and I had talked to Les about this before, when I was in school, I was very fortunate to have a class with Jack Marshall, who was an arranger at the time, and he was the uncle to Christopher Parkening, but he wrote his guitar book for him, The Classical Guitar Method. But the thing was interesting about him, and I think it's because of how you're looking harmonically, using the third and the seventh to determine the color of the chord. It allows you to do different inversions, and that was a key. He said the one thing to guitar players, he said, you guys... If you guys do string arrangements, voicing it because you have the knowledge of the guitar, it forces you to do, you're more open to inversions and stuff like that. Whereas a keyboard player, you know, they're pretty much have the root there and they'll write like that. And he said string lines written by guitar players always sound more interesting. And I think part of that is what you're talking about, because by using the third and the seventh in the root, not using the fifth,
We're forced to. We don't have enough fingers to do all that.
That's true. That is true.
We're forced. we're forced into economy and to be more aware of what notes we're playing.
Right.
You know, because if you only have, you know, we got four fingers, basically. I use a fifth one every now and then, you know, but, you know, as opposed to 10 fingers and an instrument that has a hammer that makes the note for you, there's a big difference.
Yeah.
That's why I wish I'd have played piano.
Well, it's interesting. No, but
no,
it's,
they cheat.
It's interesting, though. I had worked with another. It was a vocal coach, and he showed me things where basically using three vocalists, you could actually imply the fourth note.
Sure.
And you're doing that. A lot of times, harmonically, you're already... When you're playing with the root and you have the third and the seventh in there, you're hearing the fifth. It's implied.
Well,
you know,
no, we'll go back to the polychord thing. You know, I made a fun thing about the Gene Autry and Roy Rogers thing. But that's true. You can play every color known to man with six notes. Because that first octave, remember, you have 1-3-5 or 1-3-6 or whatever you're going to play. In the second octave, you got 9-11-13. Mm-hmm. So if you count up, you know, 1-2-3-4-5-6-7-8, 11-12-13. The next note, you know, you're right back to C. You could say B was 14, but, you know, that's not done.
Yeah.
Because it's 1-3-5-7-9-9-11-13 root if I go up in thirds. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can, you just have to be aware. Of what sound exactly that you want,
mm-hmm.
you know, and where you want the counter line, which is what I was talking about before.
Yeah, well, the counter line, I think, that's a lot of arrangements that I've played before and stuff, that counter line is really the key part.
Well, because you had said, too, with all the synthesizers and the keyboards you play, too, and he loves strings and orchestration. So, yeah, guitar players seem to seek that out to escape from, you know.
Yeah, but it does change your perspective in terms of, you know, inversions are not scary. A lot of keyboard players, you know, especially... Maybe not as much in jazz. I've seen jazz pianists like go, you know, one hand goes to the left, the other goes to the right, and the extensions are like, you know, they're just doing the most bizarre inversions I've heard in my life. But the thing is that for the most part, especially with rock players, it's root and whatever the chord is. They might play a fancy chord, but it's basically, you know, that kind of standard thing. And it's interesting with guitar. You can, and especially when you're overdubbing guitars, you can play with the inversions and what you're talking about, doubling two guitars, playing basically around each other, but using what you're talking, you know, the not necessarily kind of a chord melody thing. You get this like huge chord. Now you can do it on your guitar because you have the extra string, but usually we would overdub to make it sound
good. I can do it because I practice it. That's why I can do it. And I'm dedicated to the instrument. That's why I can do it.
Now remember, during the show, you're hearing Louisiana humor.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Well, and let's talk a little bit about that from where you are, from you're from. I know besides the big blues, there's a big blues influence there, and I'm sure that's it's influenced you. Was jazz is there's a big jazz? Louisiana is known for jazz. Is there any other place where you would say was a big, you know, melting pot for jazz?
Well, New York would be for sure, and mm-hmm. certainly Chicago. But you know, one thing I wanted to say about jazz earlier when Ronnie was talking about jazz before we got into the harmonic aspect, the one thing is that in straight ahead jazz or bebop or whatever, a lot of those melodies are Bach. And so now think about all the universities, and you went to one, and all the universities that they actually have degree programs in classical music and then in jazz, because really Bach and those Bach inventions and all those movements are the stuff that we're actually playing when we're playing straight ahead.
The last 25 years, the thing I've listened to the most is Glenn Gould. I love Glenn Gould. Everything, I got everything he's ever, mm-hmm. you know, all the partitas, all, you know, sinfonias, you know, I got all that stuff. I listen to that stuff a lot.
So that's where you get your ideas.
Mental note to self.
That's where I hear melodies and polyphony as far as integrated lines. But the the thickness of the chords. I actually just recently found out where I got most of it. Watching TV when I was a kid. I've been watching some of the old shows when I was a kid, and I never realized how much Leonard Rosenman had a big effect on me and Nelson Riddle and all of these guys, because I would hear all this music, from Combat, from The Fugitive, and it was great music. Great.
It was all orchestras.
Orchestras.
You were talking about that.
Yeah, no, I was a TV soundtracks and movie soundtracks are still a part of my life. But the thing that's interesting is Nelson Riddle, Jerry Goldsmith, John Williams. Yeah. Yeah. Those guys were jazz guys.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because you might, Combat doesn't sound jazz to me, but they're using a lot of their influences.
Oh, yeah, and a lot of serial pieces, 12-tone stuff in Combat,
Jerry Goldsmith, Goldsmith, Planet of the Apes, that was a great soundtrack. Yeah. Try to find the key of that, and I'll buy you dinner, but it's like, it was pretty, he was doing all sorts of experiments.
Alex North, too.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a great composer, really good composer. And the string god, Dick Hazard, he wrote a lot of stuff for Mancini I can't say Johnny Mandel because I think Johnny Mandel does most of his stuff, but Dick Hazard, I got to meet him, he's one of my heroes.
Yeah,
he's great.
No, that's true. Now, you besides listening to that, in terms of your melodic single note style, did you guys listen? What other instruments did you listen to? A lot of guys, I know, listen to saxophone, but I even find myself in rock situations, I like playing flute lines. Because I listen to a lot of orchestration, so to me, I get melodic ideas. I'm just curious if you guys listen to anything else.
All my favorite players, basically, are piano players.
Really?
Because piano players are great because they can play all the stuff that saxophone players can play, and they can play a harmonic backdrop.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, as a kid coming up, I guess it's again from watching all the TV shows. I wanted to know, why is he playing that melody? And why does this fit down here? Right. So I'd find the bass line. I'd find what the color of the chord is.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I know what I'm saying is the orchestration. When you put those three parts together, it's an orchestration. One guy's, he's comping and he's playing. So the piano can do all those things. And that's what I've been working on most of my life. Not that, Cannonball Adderley, stole a bunch of stuff off.
Well, let me ask you, if you can.
And how about trumpet players, too?
Yeah,
Clifford Brown.
You say you're influenced by piano. Can you demonstrate on the guitar where you're using that, you're comping, I guess, in your melodies on the bass, on the lower, like if they're lower hand? It's interesting. In his rhythm, how he did it. That's a key part of it. Now, you had mentioned that you had done some stuff, too. You had done some funk stuff. And in doing the traditional jazz, did you incorporate... Is that influenced the funk stuff?
Oh, no. Les and I grew up on Bourbon Street, James Brown, man.
Yeah, all day long. I know. Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the different styles. You had mentioned Dixieland, bebop, and we have talked a little bit about fusion and funk. How would you define bebop, and maybe give me an example of something bebop and the difference between that and Dixieland, so they get a feel about the different styles? Because it's hard. I mean, there's so much to jazz. It's hard to I mean, I know I when I hear something harmonically complex and you're doing a lot of chord melody, I'm like, that's jazz.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Or if you're playing in a gig and the guy's out of tune, and that's jazz. No, just kidding. But anyway.
God, what time do you want me to take it?
I'll take it, yeah. Take it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's same funny. Key. If I can remember. Muskrat Ramble, right?
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
As opposed to bebop, same key. You know, the Donald Lee.
Okay, that. So with the bebop, you're kind of not really arpeggiating it, but you're kind of opening it up.
The harmony is a little... The harmony moves a little more, and the melodies move a lot more.
Okay. Okay.
There's two kinds of, basically two kinds of music in jazz, and this is like a real general.
Yeah, no.
You know, so don't put the thumb on me for this one. But there's a simple backdrop with a lot of busy notes. Okay? Mm-hmm. With a lot of notes. And then there's a simple melody with a lot of harmony underneath. Okay, I would put bebop in the front of that. You know, that's the former. The latter would be, you know, Bill Evans, people like that. Simple, pretty melodies with the harmony moving a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I prefer the latter, too. You know.
Yeah.
Because I like melodies. You know?
Right, right.
The simple melodies. This thing is in my way, I guess. Wait a minute.
There, there you go.
the headphone cord. Okay.
It's a nice melody. But you get the end. I've not, you know, embellished that. Okay. So, again, that's a pretty melody. I prefer that because I want to hear the stuff underneath. I like the stuff underneath.
Right. Well, with that very end where you embellished it, that was great because you're just taking it harmonically in another place.
Yeah. Well, but the gravity is natural in there, yeah. Too. Would you agree, Elton?
Yeah, well, I think also, too, is sometimes when we're talking about all the harmony, sometimes the melody is so strong to something that no matter what chord you put underneath it, like if we did, let's see here. Come right there. But say like All the Things You Are. So if you did this... if I did this. And so you see, now the melody's so strong that when I play, I get four more gigs for playing that. Instead of going...
yeah.
But yeah, when you do this, they go, oh, yeah. And so I think that's part of the Moon River. I mean, who could be besides my father-in-law loves Moon River. Thanks, Frank. So but it's true. So
I was just picking a song that had a nice melody to it that everybody knows,
right.
And it's a pretty song. You know, you can say, it's corny. It's not a jazz song. You know, it depends. If you play, I've had guys on jazz gigs tell me, I'll say. They say, what do you want to play? I say, let's play Shadow of Your Smile. Oh, I don't want to play that. That's a casual tune. You know, I say, I guess if you play it that way, it must be. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's nothing wrong with songs. Girl from Ipanema is a great tune.
Yeah.
You know, it, the problem's not with the tune, it's the people who play them.
Yeah, that's true. What makes the Moon River work is how you embellish it and how you take us music harmonically.
Well, I mean, if you
else.
Don't have, first of all, if the melody's there for you in the simple changes. You know, and I know why guys get bugged with playing those tunes over and over again. Because those guys, they don't have any harmonic imagination. Well, if you don't have a harmonic imagination, everything's going to be boring to you.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and then, of course, you're looking, looking for a place to pass the buck. Right. It ain't the song, it's you. Get in the woodshed. You know.
That's what's so important about chordal understanding. And
yes,
and
you have to know. So. You have to know harmony in this genre. I mean, this is what Les and I both know about, dedicated our lives to.
I have a question from school.
School
modes. Do you think that's more important in fusion or just in any genre? Because we were like hit over the head with modes, and I remember Frank Kambali, modes.
Well, I think what happens is you get certain colors from certain interval distances. But the thing, if you look really close at modes, really musicologists aren't exactly sure where a lot of those names came from, even though we're talking about, you know, in the region of Greece and all this, but they think Dorian was like some leader's daughter or something, and not really. So when you hear all these sounds, but it's the interval distances, like say Phrygian's interval distance. When you hear, see this, so it's more a color. So imagine this: if I'm an artist, and so here's what happens with musicians. A real painter can paint charcoal or whatever. So now when students go to school and they're inundated with all these modes, so now imagine if you're a person that still can't paint, but I have 2,000 colors. I'm like, yeah, check this out. Here's, you know, you had the gigantic crayon box with the thousands of colors. Okay. So in a way, they're used for certain things, but some people attach that as their identity, and then everybody else is beat over the head that's how you create, and you really don't, you know. So yes, the modes are important for certain things because certain intervals will give you a certain color, but there's more than one way to get that color. But even when I have the color as a painter, I go, God, I just mastered green today.
Yeah.
Well, paint me something, you see, and that's the problem is it's not the I think one thing that I want to interject here with jazz, whether it's modes or and anything else, and I've taught all of that stuff, thousands of things. If there is 1,000 techniques for music and fusion and jazz, people don't realize that most of the master musicians maybe took 25 or 30 of those 1,000 techniques. And they mastered that and created all their music. So you don't need 1,000 techniques. Some guys only have one or two, or women, they just have one or two techniques, but they mastered it. So imagine an artist painter that only paints in charcoal, but and still vivid. So in a way, it's greater than that. But the modes are important for certain things. They create certain kinds of colors that you can use. But and certain things, if we're Lydian, we're trying to bring out the sharp 11 or this sound. So they are important. But if you make it as a badge of honor and live your life as modal master of the universe, you'll miss the point of, you know.
Well, I mean, also, too, I think in fusion, just like in rock, when you're dealing with a high-volume amp fully distorted, you're not going to be able to do a lot of the stuff, you know, that we just saw Ron do.
Oh,
because
no.
Harmonic, I mean, there's so much distortion. You'll see, and also too, when they're playing live at high volume, that's why you might see more single note.
Yeah.
And you're seeing scales and arpeggios and stuff. Like Gambali does a lot of those arpeggios.
Yeah.
Chordal stuff. And that, you know, is the, you know, technically what he's using with an amp that's fully up and distorted. You can't, you know.
Yeah, and each one has its purpose. Now, it doesn't mean everything has to be intellectual. And certain things in rock and roll, the power and the energy is very primal, and it's moving the earth. So it's an incredible thing and an experience, and people identify with it forever. So it's not really that you have to be into this. It's just if you like strings or orchestration or the harmony, if we're talking Mozart and Beethoven. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have friends of mine that years ago, several friends of mine that became film composers. And the first thing the teacher did, the real old teachers, they would give them a book of everything that Beethoven had ever done. And they say, because the first thing you have to do is study this book. every movement, every voicing. And so they literally, because it's already been done that. It's just a matter but it's so, it would take 5 years. It took them 5 years before they reached a point where, okay, now I'm getting the idea how he's connecting and moving. And that's where all the great composers, so in a way, all the techniques are valid. It's just.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting with like string writing.
Yeah.
Things you'll hear like jazz type of like what you're comping when you're playing against the melody, but actually the way they're looking at it is the individual lines and the counterpoint.
Yeah.
And it comes out that way, and it's really that was one of the fascinating things.
That's what like the 1-5 thing. It's a good way of teaching students to get a harmonic fitness and lines moving individually without having to study each line.
Right.
You play the 1 chord, you play the 5 chord, and all of a sudden if you take each note and you go like, wow, this sounds really good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's an I look at it as an orchestrational device. One of many orchestrations.
Well, in classical guitar, you'll hear a lot of those pieces, you know, Turega, Albanez and stuff. You'll see all these middle voices that it's hard, at least it was for me playing classical guitar, to get those middle voices to come out and hear them. That took technique.
Yeah.
But they were doing that kind of stuff too. They would do the polyphony and the voice leading, as we called it, and they would do all that stuff on a guitar context. And you're actually doing a lot of that too. But you get what I think is happening with what Ron was doing. He gets this counter melody with his melody, and then after he has those two, what he hears from that, he just fills in the blanks. So, I'm going to throw that in. And then that's where I think the real improvising thing is, because you're kind of, as you're moving along.
Yeah, because you can move, we can make that melody when it's standing still. You can make the counter line move up or down. And then you can take the harmony, the third and seventh, move that saying that the melody is not a third or a seventh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then you can fool with that, and then of course you can fool with the bass note too.
See, you're doing that, and I'm hearing from my orchestration background, I'm hearing the two voices because I hear them moving against each other. But then what's really cool is what you're putting in there, what you're introducing harmonically, because it doesn't follow what you would normally or what my ears train conservatively. And I think that's the genius, because you're basically like, wow, that's a harmonic. Wow, that's kind of cool.
Well, I think when he was playing those examples, you're an artist performing, and that's your intent of where you want it to go. Now, when him and I both as arrangers, when we write that stuff, we run into several problems, okay?
Mm-hmm.
One, it isn't that I have these voices moving, but I actually have to cross those voicings, because if I give it to one volley and they go, here's what I want you to play, and the other's going, do, it doesn't groove. So you really have to select that, and at the same time, we can be playing, and I just keep sliding my hand because my intent is moving, and you can't do intent when the music copyist goes, what's this right here?
No,
okay,
true.
We intend not to use you again, is it?
Well, it's some of the things that you do on guitar where you jump intervals stuff just doesn't work on other instruments. It makes sense in your guitar playing on the guitar, and it sounds killer. But it doesn't. That is true.
But you're playing too, and you just start moving your hand up, but it's the intent of where you want to go, and so that's the beauty of it, the freedom of it.
Mm-hmm.
Instead but you can get in trouble with it too, Ronnie, because if you don't write something interesting for the other person and don't move those voices, did too, probably.
Well, if you wrote any big band stuff, you know. Like saxophones, soli section.
You got
the tenor and the second, the first tenor and the second alto are flapping voices, and the baritone and the second tenor are flapping voices, swapping voices, to make so that everybody can move a key.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? if you can't have one guy going like Les just said, you know, and the other guy going, you know.
It doesn't work.
Doesn't work harmonically, but it sounds like, you know, if you got in your car and threw an anchor outside with a chain and started driving down the street.
Well, you know. The thing, too, in New Orleans, we used to play at this hotel, the Blue Room of the Roosevelt Hotel, and so we had this big band. So what happens is, as writers, there was no computers and Pro Tools, and we could hear all this. So we had to go in, and like on a Saturday when they're rehearsing, go, look, could you try out some of my stuff, and they play it, you know, and it's grooving along, and then come back, come over here for a second. Sax section gets around and go, look, we love you, but, and then, there was no way that I road tested it and then used 2,800 modules to correct it for me. Correct.
Right.
Oh, wow.
But when you use the modules, the physical part of playing it.
Yeah.
You know, that's, and jazz band,
you learned?
I was more, at SC at the time, it was more traditional orchestration, classical.
Yeah.
But the jazz band, I don't consider myself a good jazz band arranger. That's an art in itself. And it's the way you voice some of those, you know, the way they voice the saxes and the trumpets and the bones. It's just amazing. And you've got to really, I mean, they do some amazing chord. I've heard some great big band stuff in those. Their chord melody, what they're doing, is just killer. I mean, that's fascinating. I admire those arrangers.
Thing, too, with the that arrangers, jokes. And you know it, all those arrangers that work with certain horn players, not so much in high-level studio situations, but great players, they know the writers. So, like, when Bert would teach us stuff, he goes, Jimmy, you never hit that note ever. So don't write it mid-cross. And stuff like that. And the trumpet, he runs out of air at the bottom. You'll never get that out. Make it like a dotted eighth note instead of a, you know, so there's a lot to it, too, that you have to
right, and I think a lot of people, if you go on a sequencer program and try to write it out, it's not as easy as you think to make it sound like a traditional big band. You got to know how they phrase, and you got to know how they'll run lines. It's a little different, just like strings. You have to learn how they do stuff and how they phrase it. If you don't do that, it doesn't sound right. You know what I mean? That's the key to get it to really...
Well, you know, another thing with the strings that we always made jokes about for years is when you first write the strings, like we were studying with Bert Breaux. So I'm writing the string stuff, so I write... There's like a part where the string's going, you know, so you know like where they go... And I'm on a C sharp. So he comes to me and Bert goes, Les, look, I know, what's that, the second fret on the guitar? Yes, it's C sharp. He goes, one thing I want to tell you is that a C sharp, and what other note could it be? I go, oh, it's D flat. He goes, to a violin player, C sharp and D flat are two different notes.
That's you know?
And you write this stuff like, and I remember I was doing this show once, with the orchestra, the LA Philharmonic, but for these pop artists. And Trenny Lopez comes in. I don't know if you remember this artist. 12-string master. And the whole stuff was so out of tune that you couldn't play, you know?
His guitar is identical to the Barney Kessel.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. A Barney Kessel 12-string.
They made two Trenny Lopez's, the fat body, and then a one that looked like a 335 with the diamond cut in... openings and stuff.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That's where I saw it before, But C sharp and D flat aren't the same note. You know, and that's where the problem is.
And,
and you go, wait, I only have 12 frets. Wait, there's 24.
Divide that one in half.
So for about 2 hours, we laid in the back of the corner going, be my friend, be my friend. And when you tell a student that, they go, I got a lot more work to do.
Yeah, I think so.
You're hearing it here. True orchestration horror stories. Yes. Well, listen, we're out of time, and I didn't even scratch the surface. I wanted to get into the seven-string guitar. I wanted to get into a bunch of other stuff, which just means you're going to have to come back, both of you guys. Amen. This is just great. What I want to mention real quick is, for Les, check thedeliberatemusician.com, and for Ron, eshte.com. Did I say it right?
Eshte.
Like Ashtray.
Ron Eshte.com. So check out his site. And If there's any, and then also Monique.
Yeah, Monique.
Give us your info.
Well, you can just find me on Facebook, Monique Caravello. And I just want to say I'm thrilled to be here with you guys. I just remember sitting in P1 listening to you guys at MI. Just, you know, boy, and, boy, boy.
And also, both Ron and Les are on Facebook, so I know we covered some pretty heavy stuff in theory and stuff. If you have some questions, they're on Facebook. Ask them. Go ahead and post it up there and ask a question, or let me know on Flow Guitar, and we'll ask.
Don't hold your breath.
If you're going to ask me how to do big band arrangements, forget it. You can ask Les for that.
Yeah.
But anyway, before we go out, then... Anyway, thank you guys, both of you. I really appreciate you coming down. Can you play a little duet to take us out?
Okay.
Everybody have a great week, and we will see you next week.
Ha ha ha.